right, welcome back. CICOA, SECOA, or the Central Indiana Council on Aging, a.k.a. Indiana's Area 8 Agency on Aging, they do a lot of work in terms of helping families, helping children and grandchildren work with their aging parents and grandparents. Katie Kunk is an adult case manager. She has been doing this kind of work all over the place, whether New York City, the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, and now here in Indiana. She is an options counselor for family caregivers of aged and disabled folk here in Central Indiana. And Kate joins me live. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
What, first of all, CICOA, that's kind of like the umbrella agency to provide services to seniors here in Indianapolis, Marion County, and Central Indiana?
That's right. Our mission is to empower older adults and anyone of any age with a disability and family caregivers to achieve the greatest independence, dignity, and quality of life.
How big an issue is elder care here in Central Indiana, here in Indianapolis?
Well, it is huge. You know, about 97% of us will be taking care of someone in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. So this impacts all of our society.
In terms of CICOA's role, what kind of services do you all have out there? Is it something even as basic as being able to talk to children and grandchildren about the process, bringing everybody together and kind of walk them through the what-ifs?
Well, SECOA Aging and In-Home Solutions exists to provide in-home help, and in doing that, we also provide support to the caregivers, both emotionally and with good information that can help them take care of themselves. And, of course, that translates into the younger children as well. I think that it just has this profound ripple effect.
Right. So now you work with families, correct?
Yes, we do.
What's the biggest myth or misconception as you start working with families that are making decisions about elder care?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Actually, I think the biggest myth is that most people think that SECOA is only for the aged. Mm-hmm. And actually, we do help anyone of any age with a disability. Yes, we have babies waiting for services and young children, teenagers. And so, we do affect basically everyone.
Mm. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's a special edition of Afternoons with Amos. We are out here live at the Marriott East. Let me go to the phones. I think we got Robert on the line. Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing, Amos, today and your guest?
I'm fine.
I just want to take and send praises out to AARP. I'm a 24-year member of AARP. By being a member, the benefits that you derive from being a membership is tremendous, and even if you use the card for their services one time, you will recoup your yearly membership dues. So it's a great organization, and I appreciate that the work that they are doing.
All right, Robert, I appreciate that. 239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoon's name is. We're with Kate Kunk with SECOA, CICOA. You guys have at CICOA an aging and in-home solutions effort that empowers older adults. Now, what does that mean in English?
Well, in English, I would say that it allows them to remain safe and healthy and to be able to age in place. Surveys have shown that seniors in Central Indiana, about 94% of them, would prefer to stay where they are. And SECOA facilitates that by offering services with personal care, home-delivered meals, transportation program, various other kinds of things like that, just right down to information and referral about anything to do with aging and disability.
One of the, I think, the issues that comes up with elder care, particularly as the baby boomers get older, are elderly homeowners who want to stay in their home and they're in neighborhoods or they might be on a block with other seniors. As you start to work with elder care and the importance of independence and staying in your home, how important, if on a city block out of maybe 20 homes, maybe 5, 6, or 7 have seniors, those seniors, even though they're independently living in their home, they're sticking together. It's like a colony, so to speak. How important is that in terms of those relationships, that they're not just there alone in their house and they ignore their neighbors?
I think it's wonderful. They need that camaraderie and communication. They need to be able to call on one another and help one another. And often one of them will know some resources that the others don't know about, and so they can share information. And we depend a lot on word of mouth at Sokoa. I think we're all in there to help one another.
Should there be that effort to maybe, it sounds like just a senior block club.
Right.
Kind of thing, and even if they're looking out for each other, because they might be home alone, and if more than one eye looking out, you know, not only helps protect them, it helps protect the block.
That's right, and they can share resources as well. You know, maybe they can share transportation, or they can make trips for one another to the supermarket or what have you. Just all kinds of sharing opportunities.
I talked with Amy Goyer earlier about not only those who live in houses in the older areas of our city, not just from an African-American perspective, but the problem of our rural and small-town seniors. But what about the increasing number of seniors, particularly baby boomers, that moved out in the suburbs? They're out there in the cul-de-sac. Same issue. I mean, that isolation might be there, where they might be the only senior in that subdivision with a bunch of families. That's the danger of even more isolation.
Well, I think the bottom line is we all have to care about our neighbor. We really need to take a greater interest in what's going on around us and be willing to help.
One of the things the 2010 census showed was that senior citizens live all over the metropolitan area. What's Sokoa doing to make those resources easier for seniors to get to? Because, you know, back in the day, Sokoa, you know, was like in one central place in Marion County, and now the seniors are like, it's like black folks. They're everywhere.
Well, we have, aging.
Okay.
We have different kinds of agencies throughout the eight counties, and Sokoa helps to support them and make them more localized. But at the same time, you know, it's not so much a matter of always getting to those places as it is just having the information that's needed so that we can get to them.
How critical is transportation, and how important is it that we've got to figure out some kind of solution to improve public transportation in central, or at least in the central part of central Indiana?
Well, I think transportation is very critical to independence. None of us wants to be relying on, you know, having to rely all the time on family or other kinds of resources. But, you know, being able to, at a time when, you know, we may have to be giving up the keys to the car or what have you, it's so essential to be able to still get around and accomplish those tasks that we've been used to doing. And it keeps us socialized, helps us get out there and get exercise, what have you.
So if people want more information about Sokoa, Central Indiana Council on Aging, how do they find out about y'all?
Well, our front door telephone number is area code 317-254-3660. That takes you right into the Aging and Disability Resource Center, and they are phenomenal at information and referral, and they also will do eligibility assessments for in-home help. And so that's the number to call, 317.
All right, so it's 254-3660.
That's right.
254-3660. And it's not, and don't think it's not just for seniors.
That's right.
See, I learned something today. The things that I learned on the program.
I'm so glad.
Kate Cuck with Sokoa. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you. When we come back live from the Marriott East, we'll talk to April Irvin. She's returned home. She's one of them young professionals. That's a good thing. But she's returned home to serve as a caregiver. Also, we got a lawyer in the house. We'll talk to Anita Harden, who specializes in elder law. We may even tell her about the problem that we had earlier where a landlord was telling fibs about a senior. That could be a case right there. It's a special edition of Afternoons with Amos. We're live from the Marriott East at the AARP Caregiver Summit. More after these. Here we are talking about And the whole world is talking about a mom and a dad who are going to be taking care of their newborn son and making sure that he has all of the best. And here we are talking about how we take care of our moms and dads when they get in the stage of life that they need to be taken care of. April Irvin is young professional. Indianapolis High School graduate, got bachelor's and master's degrees from Big Ten universities, young professional, but she returned home to Indianapolis and found herself in the role of caregiver to her parents. And Anita Harden she specializes in senior law because a lot of these issues of care also have to deal with legal and doing everything you need to do. Guys, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Let me first ask April Irvin, how difficult was it? I mean, here you had the best of everything to go out and do your career and maybe, you know, vacation in the south of France, but to come back home and take care of your parents.
The interesting situation for me is that I actually had some health challenges myself, mm-hmm. and that was what brought me back with my parents. And fortunately, I'm extremely healthy and grateful for that. And then continued with my parents and found myself in the caregiver role. Mm-hmm. But the ironic thing is I didn't consider myself a caregiver literally until I was asked to come and speak about this. Mm. I didn't look at it from that perspective. I felt like I was a daughter that was helping to take care of her parents because that's my responsibility, because my parents spent years taking excellent care of me.
Is that something where caregiver has been a part of the black experience, part of the African diaspora, if we would go back and look at from whence we came, those tribal things, you're supposed to take care of your elders.
Yeah, it's the expectation. And so I didn't really separate it out and thinking myself of a caregiver, but as I continue participating in this conference and reading information, that's exactly what we have been doing. But it is very much a part of our culture and a part of the expectation, and in my heart and soul know that that was something I was always going to do. I definitely was doing a great deal of caregiving out of state, so at a distance and taking care of my parents. My mom actually came and stayed with me for a period of time in Chicago when she had a knee replacement, and so I took care of her then as well, and then also helped her through breast cancer, recovering from breast cancer, and so didn't really give myself that title. It's just the expectation that, you know, as our parents have done for us, we are to do for them as well.
For those who are listening who have parents who are hitting 65, hitting senior citizen, what tips would you give?
Some of the tips that I would give is, one, to recognize that you are stepping into a very different role. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes it can be a challenging transition because your parents, they're your heroes. Those are the ones who've been taking care of you your whole life. Those are the ones that you look up to, and you see some changes in them that can be a little disconcerting sometimes. And mm-hmm. so you need to prepare yourself for that. The other thing I would say is really be very compassionate. And have a lot of patience, because this is a challenging transition for them as well. As they're getting older and making transitions in their lives, we need to be very understanding of the changes that they're making in their lives as well. For example, my parents are looking to transition out of their home that they've been in for 30 years. That's a huge transition, and so you have to have a lot of patience and understanding.
Are they going into assisted living downsizing?
We're downsizing. Mm-hmm. We're downsizing and getting into a much smaller home and being on one level, something that's much more manageable. And to help really streamline their lives and make it stress-free. That's my goal for them. But I would say to folks that are stepping into this role, you have to understand that it is a challenge and change for your parents just as much as it is for you. And so you're going to have to step back and be very compassionate and understanding as you're going through this process. And also prepare yourself, because it also is emotional. Because you're accustomed to your parents being a certain way. And so when you see them progressing in their age, that can be very emotional for you. The other thing I can say, and I feel very blessed to be in the position that I am in, treasure this time. I wouldn't trade this time for the world. You know, with being living with my parents for over a year now, I wouldn't trade this time for the world, because these are memories that I will have for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. When they have gone on, when I have gone on, these are memories that I will treasure forever. And so I enjoy every day of it and recognize that it is a part of my responsibility as a daughter, but it also can be some of the most fulfilling time of your life as well.
239-1310 this afternoon's name is Anita Harden. We began this conversation in our 1 o'clock hour with Amy Goyer,
the National Home and Family Expert for AARP, we talked about if somebody is in assisted living, you know, who calls the shots? I mean, when I use the example of school, I mean, if you have a child in school, everybody knows the parent is calling the shots. The parent is the one that deals with school administrators and, if necessary, going up the chain of command. When you're dealing with a parent in assisted living in a facility, they're an adult. They're independent unless they have, you know, signed away their legal rights. But then you've got the children who, you know, want to have some say. How difficult, you know, how do you equate the ability of the children to help drive the care, particularly in assisted living, and then you've got an independent adult that's there saying, well, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, how do you manage that from a legal perspective?
From a legal perspective, one of the first things the facility will ask for is a power of attorney, mm-hmm. the advance directive.
They want to know who really is driving the train.
Exactly. They want to know who to go to in case something goes down. Now, the power of attorney does not take away that loved one's rights.
Right.
It just gives that other person the authority to act on their behalf. So they want that on file. They want the health care. They're called advanced directives, but they want the health care power of attorney also on file, the financial power of attorney, and the living will, which is basically a document that says, in case this person ever becomes in a vegetative state, should they be kept on life support and should they be artificially supplied with hydration or nutrition. Those are the key documents that that facility will want.
Let me go back if it's not assisted living. Let's say it's like the situation with April here. And let's say she's the one physically here taking, you know, helping to take the care, helping to help make the decisions. And there are other siblings that are, you know, scattered to the four winds. And all of a sudden, they decide they want to come in here and call the shots. How do you deal with who calls the shots among the siblings?
The first thing that I always do in any doctor's office, hospital, or nursing home will ask, who has power of attorney? And from an ethical standpoint, I cannot deal with anybody but that person who has power of attorney.
Right.
So even though there may be conflict among the siblings, I have to ignore that and say, who has that document? Now, Amos, if that loved one is to the point that they're incapacitated and they cannot do a power of attorney, because Indiana law says you have to be of sound mind,
right,
and they have dementia that's too far gone, then you have to do with what a court-ordered guardianship and go to court, and that takes away the loved ones, all of their rights. They become more or less like a child. Mm. The power of attorney does not.
But I think in the focus of talking about the importance of independent living for seniors, as long as that is physically possible, and that is the goal. So a lot of this is making sure that the family dynamics are harmonious. Is it for April? Is that part of it from your perspective? That the family's got to be at least on. They may fuss and fight because families don't fuss and fight. But at least they're on the same page.
It is critically important, and that is actually something my brother and I did several months ago, where we sat down with our parents and kind of started to have these conversations, and he and I have the conversations as well. You don't really need, in the midst of transition, you don't need any additional conflict. Mm-hmm. And so as much as possible, as the siblings, as the children, you need to get on the same page. If it is a case where that's not feasible, then someone has to step up and take responsibility.
Right.
But as much as possible, if you can, so my brother and I were on the same page. We talked about it, and then we sat down with our parents and started to have these conversations, and it just helps the whole process.
Was that a difficult conversation?
It was definitely a difficult conversation. It's a part of the acceptance process, you know, accepting that they are getting older, accepting that there are transitions that are going to have to happen. And it's dialogue that I've had probably with my mom longer than my father. I think that was the more difficult one with my father, but it can be challenging. But again, you want to approach it with a lot of love and compassion and understanding.
How important is faith playing this?
Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't be here without my faith. It's extremely important. I've prayed on this situation a great deal because I am a type of person that I've been told that sometimes I can be a little controlling and come in and control situations. And I don't want my parents to feel like that I'm trying to control their lives. And I've said that to them. My goal is to come in and be a resource and a support. I love you very much, and I'm going to come in and do what I can do. But, yeah, it is a part of that process.
As we look at this issue in the African-American community in terms of elder care, do our faith leaders need to understand this and know how to counsel? Because this is something, as the numbers of African-American senior citizens grow, as the percentage of the overall black community grows, because, again, as we've said all during the program, we focus so much when we talk about the African-American community. We focus on kids, we focus mm-hmm. on teens, we focus on youth, we focus on young black men,
mm-hmm.
and we rarely talk about seniors. It's almost like, yeah, we know we get old, but we really don't want to deal with that. And even as our cultural icons become, mm-hmm. I mean, Jesse Jackson's in his 70s, you don't look it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Al Sharpton's getting up there. The OJs can dance around and prance the Temptations. They're all, you know, senior citizens. And we don't realize that is a growing population.
Yes, I'm actually going to pass this on to Anita, because actually that is how I met Anita. My church actually had a part of our women's conference. There was a session on elder care and how we are transitioning from being the children, being taken care of, and actually taking care of our parents.
Anita, is that something that we really don't talk about a lot? I mean, you do that. This is your practice, you know, in terms of law.
Usually people do not want to talk about it until it's a crisis, because nobody really wants to talk about death, dying, and sickness. And then a crisis comes and you have to. But one of the things I find that in talking about it, I usually also counsel my clients not only on the legal aspects, but the caregivers in regards to their self-care, especially in the African-American community, and especially with African-American women. We are notorious for taking care of people. And so many times what I see to the demise of our own health. So there's a real balancing act, Amy, that you have to do.
This may be a dumb question. People prepare wills as a document of the living to determine how things are divided once they're gone. Should seniors prepare a document like a memo that says, if I ever get to point X, do this?
That's a good question.
That's not a legal document like a will, but it's sort of like a memorandum that says, hey, I'm here and I'm sound mind. If I ever get to a point where, you know, I can't make it on my own, here's what I'd like to do. If I really start bumping into the driveway on the way out, then yes, that's the time you take the car keys away. I mean, is that?
Right now, the only document that people do that's even close to that is the healthcare power of attorney,
right,
where it says, in case I get into a vegetative state or a coma. Mm-hmm. And then recently, the legislature passed the post law, which is basically a document that talks about the doctors do that if that person is in the last stages of their life, what to do, should we resuscitate,
yeah,
things of that nature.
Right.
But as far as the document they're talking about, a person can, but it really has no legal substance.
Yeah, I knew it had no legal effect, would that help in terms of siblings, in terms of a roadmap?
I think it would. I think you need to have, as much as possible, a very clear, common understanding
mm-hmm.
of the expectations and what is going to happen with your parents. And those are the difficult conversations, you know, when you see your dad, you know, reactions a little bit, driving a little slower. And so I think if anything,
You've not had the car conversation. We were talking about that earlier, where that's like the conversation parents have with their kids
at the teenage year. You know, fortunately, my parents are still fairly young. And so I'm very blessed and grateful that we're starting this process early to transition them. But you see some changes in reaction in things like that, and so you do get concerned. And so as much as possible, if siblings can have that conversation, and although it's not a legal document, if it can be just documented in some way. So, again, reducing any level of stress during this time is critically important. So the more upfront conversation you have, the better off you're going to be.
Anita, when a family gets to the decision, even the seniors, that the assisted living piece has to be looked at, how do you evaluate a facility?
You need to go to the facility several. You need to just use your senses. Does it have an odor when you get there? Do not announce that you're coming. Look at how receptive the staff is, not only to you when you walk in unexpectedly, but how receptive are they to the people that are staying there? Are they caring for their needs? Do the people look well cared for that are staying
there?
So you're
asking people to do things that they may not have done with their own children in terms of deciding what elementary school they're going to, or what high school they're going to, or even what college they went to.
Exactly. The best way to determine what facility you should put your parents or parent in is to go visit it unannounced.
Mm.
And then you can later
pop in. Surprise!
Yes. Later you can come back and make an appointment, have lunch, the whole bit. But just get the feel of the place and use your instincts.
Is one of the issues, and this is probably more for Anita, because we've got a sisterhood and brotherhood here, so we could talk black. As the number of black seniors grow, and we don't have a lot of black-owned assisted living facilities, are we going to see more of issues of African Americans being a distinct minority in a majority white assisted living, and we're going to see some of the same kinds of things we saw in our schools when schools got integrated?
That is an excellent question, and I think the answer is yes. And the reason why is because, at least in the state of Indiana, there are very few Medicaid-covered assisted living facilities, meaning that for the most part, Medicaid covers nursing homes, but not assisted living, which is unskilled care. So as a result, about 90% or 95% of the people in assisted living are private pay. Mm-hmm. The average assisted living is ranging from anywhere from $2,000 to $7,000 a month. So as a result, how many African Americans can afford that? A few can, but very few, not unless they have long-term care insurance.
Right.
So yes.
So that is going to be an issue.
Yes, it is. It is going to be an issue. And already now, if you go to assisted living, you might see one or two. But for the most part, you don't see very many. And usually those are people who have a certain amount of means.
How important, April, is socialization and the ability of your parents to still be able to socialize with their peers?
I think it's critically important. I think that as much as possible that they can maintain the normal daily routine that they've had for a number of years is very important. And so keeping those relationships that they've had with friends for a very long period of time, and then the opportunity to meet new individuals as well. And one thing I challenge my parents with, which we're still working on, is to consider new activities, you know, mm-hmm. things you haven't done before. We went bowling as a family a couple months ago. My father loves bowling. And I'm like, well, why don't you do that? You know, that's a great activity for you, to maybe get into a bowling league and stay active. But I think it's critically important, especially as they see their friends getting older and struggling with health issues, and unfortunately some that have passed on. Mm. And so that's a reality that hits them. You know, my father's lost a number of friends, and so that's a reality that hits him. And so as much as possible that you can keep those linkages to individuals that they've been friends with and, you know, family as well, and
is
then staying
also,
active.
Is it also a fear of hanging with maybe some younger people that might be 10 years younger, as opposed to, you know, not hanging with some 20-year-olds, but hanging mm-hmm. with some 50 and 60-year-olds, if somebody's 70 or 80.
A fear of that?
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. I think that, you know, the reality is as they're getting older, you know, they have a mix of individuals that they've connected
right,
with.
Right,
both my parents
right.
have a variety of friends that they've been friends with for a number of years. But I think that the more that you can keep and hone and keep those relationships together, it's very important. But you want to connect with people that you have things in common with, too.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes being with somebody a little younger keeps you young.
Mm.
You know, they say I keep them young. So it's a good thing that I'm able to interact with them.
If they were like the line dancers that I ran into last Thursday at Expo, that was a fiery group right there. They were trying to get me to line dance in the middle of that, and I said, no, not yet. Wait a couple of years. 239-1310. 239-1310. We are live from the AARP Caregiver Summit at the Marriott East. On the program tomorrow, we're just going to kind of, there's been a whole lot of issues going on the back burner. We will deal with those on tomorrow and then Thursday. I even know Anita Harden's going to be listening on Thursday, because Thursday we're going to walk you through the new expungement law. Everybody's got questions. Everybody's trying to figure out, and this is, the law is tricky. It is a great benefit, but it's one of those laws where you got to dot your I, cross your T's, do everything you got to do the right way. And we've got people from the Marion County Clerk's Office. We've got attorneys that will be with us. And more importantly, we got two of the people that actually wrote the legislation and got it through the legislature on a bipartisan basis. That's a special edition of Afternoons with Amos on Thursday. We're live at the AARP Caregiver Summit. We'll be back with our remaining moments after these.
All right, we're back. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. With April Irvin, who is a care, you know, she's young professional, but she's also taking care of her parents, Anita Harden, who deals with elder law. From an elder law perspective, if what's the biggest legal issues facing senior citizens today? I mean, we heard about an instance where a senior was being victimized, a former landlord possibly giving inaccurate information in references, you know, on them. We hear about scams all the time with seniors. From a legal perspective, seniors listening, what should they be most concerned about?
I think fraud. You have so many people, whether it's contractors or workmen, who are trying to scam people and get them to sign over their houses in exchange for, you know, doing roofs and things like that. So I think a person, if they're the child or the niece or the neighbor of a person that is experiencing mild or advanced dementia, you really need to watch whether people are trying to scam them.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's name. Is it also that the, I won't say coping skills, that's the wrong word. Is it that as you get older, you don't want to spend as much time worrying about things? Yeah, I got a problem, I want it solved, and somebody that comes along and can help me solve my problem easier is susceptible to that?
Yes, and I think you're also more trusting sometimes when you get older, especially if your children are living out of state or mm-hmm. they're deceased, and you need somebody you can trust, and so you're going to trust that neighbor who maybe doesn't mean you the best of good, or that person down the street that comes up and says, can I mow your lawn? You're more likely to do that, where 20 years before that, you would have been much more discerning.
Right. Yeah. In terms of all of this, as the number of seniors grow, and again, this is the baby boomer generation. If you really look at it, this was the generation on the front lines of civil rights and human rights. These were the young people who sat in the counters, who, you know, dealt with the hoses and the dogs, who helped open the doors for both of your generations. As they get older, are we, and they encounter a lot of these senior serving agencies that have not been used to serving a lot of us-ins, are we going to see some of that same activism? Say, wait a minute, you can't tell me what to do. I done survived this and survived that.
I would say yes. The baby boomers, and especially in the African-American community, we have driven the economy and the civil rights movement from the time that, like you said, the 60s. And we're going to drive it till we leave this earth. By 2030, the last baby boomer will have turned officially a senior citizen. We'll be 25%, this is all people inclusive, of the American population.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we, and particularly the African American community, will drive the movement to the day we leave this earth.
Is it also the importance of asset protection, not just protecting any property that one has, but depending on what pension, Social Security, other resources, as well as the ability of those that want to continue to work to keep the mind active, whether it's, you know, doing something out of the house, or, you know, if you can consult when you're 30, you can consult when you're 70 or 80. What are your folks doing to keep their mind active? I mean, you talked about the, you know, because they say if you're thinking and acting and reading and engaging your mind, that kind of keeps you going some.
that is really important. And for a period of time, both of my parents had, you know, additional jobs after they retired, and that really kept them active. At this time, they are not working outside of the home, and there might be a consideration at some point to consider that again, because it really, you could see the difference. It also helps with routine. You know, even if it was just a few days a week where my dad was going to a little part-time position, it helped with his routine, because activity is critically important. We know that from an overall health perspective. We know that with the development of the brain and keeping yourself alert and active, it's critically important to have some level of activity. So even if it's not a job that they're working outside of the home, if there's opportunities for them to volunteer in some way, if there are opportunities to get more involved in the church and taking on specific roles and responsibilities in the church.
Volunteer for AARP, because
yes,
there's a bunch of seniors
and volunteer
out here.
For AARP, any volunteer activities, because fortunately, you know, if you're in the position where you've worked very long time in your life and you're fortunate you have pension and Social Security, it may not be a need for the income necessarily, but the activity and the connection and the relationships. And so if there are opportunities for that, I think that would also be very helpful as they continue in that aging process.
We talked earlier about the technology, and obviously the back end of the baby boomers are the ones that kind of, you know, are probably more technologically oriented than the front end of the baby boomers. And that technology, well, if you're on the internet, you're not isolated. You can find out what the heck is going on in the world and be engaged. And that's something that seniors didn't have 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. That's another way for them to stay active and to keep their mind active and to learn something new as much as possible, and not be afraid to approach it and not be intimidated by it either. Just because it's developed in a certain way, technology can be a great way for their continuing care.
And Anita Hardin, since you do elder law, if people want more information about you, or if they got an elder law thing, how do they get a hold of you?
They can contact me through the Anita Hardin Law Office. I'm also of counsel of Coleman Stevenson Montel. Telephone number 317-415-0256. That's 317-415-0256.
And if people want more information about AARP, they've got a toll-free number, 1-866-448-3618. 1-866-448-3618. And you just go online to AARP.org. Now, that's real simple. AARP.org. Anita Hardin and April Irving, guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.